February 8th, 2005. Totowa, New Jersey. 43-year-old chemist Geeta Angara shows up to work her shift at the Passaic Valley Water Commission treatment facility, but turns up missing. The following day, Geeta's body is discovered inside one of the water tanks, and her cause of death is determined to be drowning. A number of bruises on Geeta's neck and body suggest that she got into a violent struggle before she was placed in the tank, so her case is classified as a homicide. Police investigate a number of Geeta's co-workers, but the killer is never identified, and the motive for the crime remains unknown. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to our latest episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and we've got a pretty harrowing case to cover today, the 2005 death of Geeta Angara. This case was requested to me several months ago by a listener named Courtney, and I had never heard of it before, but once I started looking into it, I knew it deserved coverage on this podcast. If you've watched Unsolved Mysteries or listened to The Trail Went Cold, a lot of you are probably already familiar with the story of Dave Box, who died under mysterious circumstances during one of his shifts at a nuclear processing plant when his body wound up inside a furnace. Well, today's case has a number of similarities, as it involves a chemist named Geeta Angara, who vanished during one of her shifts at a water treatment plant before her body was discovered inside one of the water tanks. The evidence seemed to suggest that someone violently attacked Geeta and choked her before removing a panel from the floor and disposing of Geeta's body inside the tank. Given that the plant was a secure facility which could not be accessed by outsiders, it seemed obvious that Geeta was killed by one of her co-workers, but in spite of an extensive investigation, no one could figure out who was responsible or what their motive could have been. And believe it or not, there are also some people who believe that Geeta's death might have actually been a tragic accident when she failed to notice the open panel in the floor and fell into the tank. Whatever the case, there are still no conclusive answers about what happened, so we're going to explore all the different theories on today's episode. However, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now delve into the unexplained death of Geeta Angara. Our story begins in 2005 in Totowa, New Jersey, a borough in Passaic County which has a population of around 10,000 people and is located about 12 miles outside of Newark. Our central figure is 43-year-old Geeta Angara, who works at the treatment facility for the Passaic Valley Water Commission. The commission is responsible for providing drinking water to over 800,000 residents, and the facility purifies an estimated 83 million gallons of water every day. Geeta originally hails from Chennai, India, and became the first woman to ever attend Loyola College when the school officially became co-ed. She wound up earning both a bachelor's and master's degrees in chemistry and received a gold medal after graduating as the top student in her class. Geeta also got married to her husband, Jaya Angara, and the couple would emigrate to the United States in 1984. After attaining additional master's degrees and a doctorate in organic chemistry at New York University, Geeta eventually started her job with the Passaic Valley Water Commission. By this point, she has been employed at the water treatment plant for over 12 years and lives with her family about 45 minutes away in Holmdel Township. Geeta and Jai also now have two daughters, 19-year-old Pavitra and 9-year-old Priya, along with a 13-year-old son named Vivek. In 2004, Geeta would earn her plant operator's license and was promoted to the position of senior chemist, which meant she would be responsible for the calibration of 135 devices at the plant, including the water clarity sensors. The facility is currently in the midst of a $70 million project, which will transition from the usage of chlorine treatments to purify the water to an ozone disinfection system instead. One of Geeta's responsibilities is to oversee the new ozone generators and ensure that the plant's water quality remains within the standards of the Environmental Protection Agency. On the morning of February the 8th, Geeta arrived at the water treatment facility to begin her shift, which ran from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. Shortly before 10 a.m., Geeta was chatting with some of her co-workers in the break room when one of the technicians from her lab walked in and informed her that the plant's filters and clarity sensors needed to be calibrated. Shortly thereafter, Geeta returned to the lab, and sometime between 10:15 and 10:30, she left the area while carrying a clipboard, a beaker, and a two-way radio. The instruments which needed to be calibrated were located in the plant's basement, a series of 8-foot-wide tunnels lined with large pipes. When Geeta did not return, the lab technician who asked her to go down there went into the basement to search for her. He noticed some broken glass on the floor, but did not find Geeta, and when he returned upstairs to ask if anyone had seen her anywhere, no one had. Well, in spite of this, several more hours would pass before anyone at the plant made a big deal about Geeta's absence. That evening, Geeta was supposed to give one of her daughters a ride to a basketball game, but she never showed up. She also failed to return home, and all calls to her cell phone went unanswered. At around 9 p.m., the plant was ready to close for the day, but one of the guards noticed that Geeta's car was still in the parking lot. It also turned out that Geeta's coat, purse, and cell phone were still inside the lab, and a sandwich she had been planning to eat for lunch was on her desk. A search was performed at the plant, and an interesting discovery would be made in the basement corridor next to the spot where the lab technician had discovered broken glass earlier that day. There were a series of water tanks located underneath the floor, which could be accessed by opening up some 4-foot, 50-pound aluminum diamond-plated panels. They were ordinarily held in place by a dozen screws, but it turned out that one of the panels was slightly ajar, and many of the screws were broken or missing. When a full search failed to turn up any trace of Geeta, the manager called the police to officially report her missing at 11:22 p.m. The authorities would focus their attention on the loose panel in the basement, as the tank beneath it was 35 feet deep and 100 feet in diameter and held 1 million gallons worth of water. At around 2 a.m. on February the 9th, they would order the plant to be shut down and began the process of draining the tank. Once all the water was drained out, Geeta's radio and clipboard were discovered inside the empty tank, but there was still no sign of her. A decision was made to start draining the plant's other water tanks in case Geeta's body had managed to drift into one of them. Sure enough, at around 6:30 p.m. that evening, her body would be discovered inside a tank known as the Clearwell, which is the final storage space for filtered water after it has completed the filtration and disinfection processes. The tank would be drained, and the Passaic Valley Water Commission issued a precautionary boil water order, a public health advisory which is sent out when a community's drinking water has been contaminated, recommending that the residents boil their water in order to purify it. An autopsy would reveal that Geeta was still alive when she first entered the water, so her official cause of death was determined to be drowning. However, there were also a number of deep bruises on Geeta's neck to suggest that someone had attempted to strangle her, as well as additional bruises on her waist and elbow to indicate she had been involved in a violent struggle. It was suspected that someone had attacked and incapacitated Geeta in the plant's basement before removing one of the access panels, dumping her body into the water tank and hastily replacing the panel. There was a 5-foot gap between the water and the panel, and since the tank was not equipped with a ladder or any lighting, it would have been impossible for Geeta to climb out, even if she was still conscious. As a result of these findings, the Passaic County Prosecutor's Office announced that the case would be investigated as a homicide. There was no sign of sexual assault on Geeta's body, and investigators believed that her killer did not use a weapon to attack her and only used their bare hands. The temperature of the water inside the tanks was only 36 degrees Fahrenheit, and since Geeta was believed to be submerged there for around 32 hours, the heavy chlorine levels would have corroded and eliminated any potential trace evidence that the perpetrator left behind, such as DNA and fingerprints. Another issue is that since a number of other people had walked through the basement tunnels in the hours following Geeta's death, a potential crime scene was compromised. In fact, even though the shards of broken glass found near the panel seemed to be consistent with the beaker Geeta had been carrying, employees had already swept them up and threw them away before the police arrived. Even though the tank contained a sensor, which was designed to set off an alert about changes with the water displacement, it happened to be broken at this time and was not set off when Geeta's body entered the water. There were no security cameras in the basement, and it contained a lot of loud machinery, which likely muffled any noise which may have been caused by the attack on Geeta. In a bizarre turn of events, just over 1 year before Geeta's death, the plant had been used as a filming location for an episode of the TV series Law & Order Special Victims Unit. The episode, titled Brotherhood, featured a scene in which the body of one of the characters was found floating inside a water tank. In spite of this, investigators did not suspect that the episode inspired Geeta's death and believe that the whole situation was nothing more than an unfortunate coincidence. Since access to the plant was restricted, it seemed very likely that one of Geeta's co-workers was responsible for her death. There was only one driveway to access the facility, and anyone who entered had to check in at a manned security post, which was monitored by a camera and had a 10-foot-high gate. There were a number of cameras and motion detectors surrounding the perimeter, and the only section of the property which was not surrounded by fence was the south side of the Passaic River. While it would have been very difficult for an outsider to enter the plant, security inside the facility was not as tight, as none of the areas required access with a key card, and the employees could walk around freely anywhere. As a result, this would make it difficult for investigators to track the movements for each employee and determine which ones might have been in the basement during the time period Geeta was killed. The plant had 85 employees in total, and security records would show that 50 of them were present and working that day. While all of these employees willingly provided DNA samples to police, this did not prove very useful, since all potential DNA evidence had been eradicated by the chlorine. When investigators started looking into Geeta's background, she was described as a very friendly, cheerful person who generally had good relationships with her co-workers and with management. However, there were some co-workers who reportedly did not like her and were resentful of her promotion to senior chemist. Even though Geeta always downplayed her own academic credentials, there was apparently some jealousy about her PhD. When this case was later featured in an article in People magazine, an anonymous employee alleged there was racial prejudice towards Geeta, stating, quote, 98% of the plant is white, and not all of them like seeing immigrants do well, end quote. There was also tension about the plant's transition from chlorine treatments to an ozone disinfection system, as some employees apparently did not agree with the initiative. In the weeks prior to her death, a pinkish substance was found in some treated water while Geeta was out sick. Even though the issue was resolved in her absence, it was not done according to the plant's protocol, so Geeta would be assigned to retrain some of her co-workers. This did not go over well with everyone, and one employee reportedly blamed Geeta and the plant's new ozone cleansing process for the appearance of the pinkish substance. Her husband Jay would state, quote, "My wife told me the atmosphere was very hostile at the time. There was friction," end quote. However, investigators suspected that Geeta's death was not a premeditated murder and could have been the result of a workplace dispute which escalated out of control. After spending a month interviewing all of the plant's employees, they narrowed down the field of potential suspects to 8, but after a year-long investigation, it was announced that this number had been narrowed down to 3. While none of these 3 potential suspects were ever named publicly, it was revealed that all of them were male and had worked at the plant on the day Gita was killed. It also turned out that one of these suspects was a supervisor, and one of the others was the same lab technician who had asked Gita to go down into the basement to calibrate the filters and clarity sensors. But it must be noted that according to the plant records, these instruments did need to be calibrated that day, so his story checked out. According to Lieutenant James Wood, the chief homicide detective for the Passaic County Prosecutor's Office, none of these 3 men had solid alibis, and he believed that one of them was on the verge of confessing until he decided to lawyer up and stop speaking with the police. They were each asked to take lie detector tests, and while one of them refused to do so, one of the men did wind up passing, and the other's results were inconclusive. There was just no evidence to implicate any of the 3 suspects, so the investigation would reach a standstill until a new theory started to form that Gita's death may have been an accident. Detectives would consult with Derek Pounder, a forensic pathologist from the University of Dundee in Scotland, who was considered to be an expert in the field of drownings. Even though the bruising on Gita's neck suggested that she had been strangled, Pounder had an alternate explanation for them. He claimed there were a few documented cases of drowning victims being found with similar bruising, which was caused by extremely cold water. According to Pounder, if Gita was still conscious when she entered the water tank, the cold temperatures could have caused her to go into shock. If her head and neck were above the water while this was taking place, this may have led to hemorrhaging at the neckline, which caused her bruises to form. During an article published in the New York Post, an anonymous insider from the plant came up with a potential explanation for how Gita could have entered the water accidentally. According to this insider, on the day of Gita's death, the state ordered some testing on the water due to the appearance of a quote-unquote pinkish haze. Even though water samples could be collected from the tanks with some newer machinery, there was apparently one water quality supervisor who was described as quote-unquote very old school and still had a tendency to take water directly from the tank manually. This would have involved removing a panel from the floor of one of the basement corridors, so one potential theory is that someone could have done this and left the scene without putting the panel back in place. Since the corridors were dimly lit, it's possible that Gita could have unknowingly walked over the opening in the floor and fallen into the water tank. When the responsible party returned to the scene and put the panel back into position, they may have been unaware that Gita was inside the tank, or if they did know, they decided to cover their tracks in order to avoid potential liability issues. Well, believe it or not, after the lead homicide detective, James Wood, retired, he would later state during an interview that he had changed his mind about the case and now believed that Gita's death was an accident caused by negligence rather than an intentional homicide. However, the biggest issue was that Pounder's theory was based on nothing more than guesswork, as he apparently did not view the original autopsy report. He also could not examine Gita's body, as her family had elected to cremate her in accordance with Hindu funeral customs. During the initial stages of the investigation, Gita's body and autopsy report had been examined by no less than 5 separate pathologists from Passaic County, and they all came to the same conclusion that her death was a homicide. Gita's family also did not agree with the theory, noting that she was a very conscientious person who had a reputation for being a perfectionist, and they found it doubtful that she would have walked through the basement corridor without noticing an open panel on the floor beneath her. Her oldest daughter Pavritha would state, quote, "I think you would have to ignore a lot of facts to believe it was an accident," end quote. For their part, other plant employees claimed that they had never personally witnessed an incident where someone removed a floor panel and left it open for an extended period of time after leaving the scene. In 2007, the Angara family would file a wrongful death lawsuit, against the Passaic Valley Water Commission, alleging that the plant had a history of safety violations which were never remedied. The suit was tied up in litigation for 2 years, before a state judge ordered the parties to mediate for a potential settlement, but I've been unable to find how this lawsuit ultimately turned out. In 2015, a 10th anniversary article was published about Geeta's death, where John Lautaraca, the former Passaic County Chief Assistant Prosecutor, confirmed that the three men considered to be potential suspects during the early stages of the investigation were no longer believed to be responsible. Lautaraca stated, quote, "There were a couple of people who raised their antennas, but when push came to shove, we looked into the additional things that became areas of concern in interviewing these folks, and based on that, we thought that while there were reasons they came across as hinky, we ultimately didn't believe they actively killed her," end quote. At the moment, the case is described as, quote-unquote, open but inactive, so there's still no answers about what caused the death of Geeta and Gara. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. So like I mentioned in the intro, this story is very reminiscent of the suspicious death of Dave Box, which was not only featured on Unsolved Mysteries and The Trail Went Cold, but was the subject of an entire season of the long-form investigative podcast Accused last year. In both of these cases, an employee disappeared during the middle of their shift at a large plant and was not reported missing for a long period of time before the victim, or what was left of them, was discovered on company grounds. In one case, it was a uranium processing furnace, and in the other, it was a water tank, but no matter the circumstances of how they died, you can only hope the victim was not conscious when they found themselves in that position. Now, Dave Box was working the graveyard shift, and died inside a building which was not being used at that particular time of night, so if it was a homicide, you can understand how someone could have gotten away with it. However, Geeta and Gara's death was a lot more brazen, since it apparently took place in an open corridor during the morning hours, so the perpetrator got extremely lucky that no one else happened to come by while this was going on. While a suicide has been explored as a potential explanation in the Box case, no one has ever considered that possibility in Geeta's case, because if she jumped into the water tank voluntarily, it obviously would have been impossible for her to slide the panel back into place behind her. Theoretically, that should have eliminated all possibility of her death being an accident as well, but this has been presented as a potential explanation, and I'll talk more about that later on. Now, Dave Box's story has always had a major conspiracy vibe surrounding it, because in the months following his death, his plant was hit with a major scandal once it became public knowledge that they had been causing radioactive contamination in the surrounding community. So one of the most prominent theories is that Dave was murdered because he was threatening to blow the whistle on the plant's unsafe practices. This has been presented as a potential theory in Geeta's case as well, but it's unclear what she could have stumbled upon that put her life in danger. I mean, during this time period, the water facility was in the midst of an expensive project to transition from chlorine to an ozone disinfectant system, but while this wasn't a popular decision with all the employees, it was hardly scandalous. Believe it or not, one of the most ridiculous theories which has been put forward is that the New Jersey mob was angry about the Water Commission's decision to switch to ozone treatment because it would curtail the work that their contractors were doing. So as a result, the mob decided to order a hit on Geeta. Well, that theory makes no sense whatsoever, because Geeta was a chemist who had no authority to make big decisions like that, so I don't see how murdering her would change anything. I really don't get the sense that there's a massive conspiracy surrounding Geeta's death, and the crime may have been more personal in nature. This case is pretty unique, in that it seems to be pretty solvable, yet at the same time, it's also an investigator's worst nightmare. By the sound of things, the exterior security at this plant was pretty strong, and it would have been very difficult for an outside intruder to sneak into the facility and commit this crime. This means that the perpetrator had to be one of Geeta's co-workers who was on shift that day, so there was a pool of 50 potential suspects to work with. But at the same time, there really doesn't seem to be any conclusive evidence which could implicate any of them. Since there was a window of over 12 hours before the police became involved, a number of people walked through the basement tunnels through the spot where Geeta was likely killed, contaminating the crime scene. The shards of glass on the floor from Geeta's broken beaker could have provided evidence, but someone took the initiative to throw them away. And due to the heavy chlorination of the water, all potential forensic evidence which could have been left by the killer on Geeta's body, such as DNA and fingerprints, was eliminated. With no witnesses or security camera footage placing a suspect at the murder scene, I think police were hoping that if they interrogated everyone hard enough, the perpetrator would eventually break down and make a full confession, but this never took place. For a while, investigators were certain that they had narrowed down the field to three suspects, but after all these years, they apparently now believe that none of these guys were actually involved. So unless a confession takes place, or someone with inside knowledge of the crime comes forward with information, it's really hard to see how the police will be able to build a strong enough case against anyone to make an arrest. While security protocols preventing outsiders from entering the plant seem to be adequate, security protocols inside the plant were a different story. Since no keycard access was required at the time, anyone could move about the plant freely and pretty much go wherever they wanted. They've since remedied that in the years following Geeta's death, but investigators have stated that if these security protocols had been around all along, it would have been easier to track all of the employees' movements that day and possibly determine who was in the basement during the approximate time period Geeta was killed. It's pretty unsettling to hear that the underground water tanks were not equipped with any lighting or ladders, even though there was a 5-foot gap between the water and the panels. So if someone did fall in there by accident, it would have been impossible for them to climb out before they succumbed to the freezing cold temperatures. In addition, the sensor which was designed to send out alerts about changes with the water displacement just happened to be broken that day, which is why it didn't go off when Geeta's body hit the water. It's possible it was deliberately sabotaged by the perpetrator, but if the sensor was simply broken, that's really not reassuring. Remember, this was just over 3 years removed from 9/11, and one disturbing point which was raised is if the sensor couldn't detect a body, what if there had been an attempt at a terrorist act and someone dumped some dangerous chemicals into the drinking water? So obviously, Geeta's death exposed some major inadequacies with the plant's safety protocols. I also find it troubling that there was a window of over 6 hours during Geeta's shift when her whereabouts were unaccounted for, but no one really seemed to be troubled by it, and the police were not contacted until around several hours after her shift ended. I mean, when Geeta went missing, she was carrying a radio, which wound up being found inside the tank, but it's unclear if anyone even attempted to call her on a radio to see where she was. Even if there was only one person who was directly involved in Geeta's death, this makes me wonder if others might have been aware of what happened, but kept their mouth shut. The panels of the water tank weighed around 50 pounds, and it would have been difficult for one person to remove it, dump Geeta into the tank, and replace the panel by themselves. So even if only one person killed her, they could have enlisted the assistance of others to cover the whole thing up. You can understand how unsettling this whole situation must have been for everyone at that plant. It was conclusively established that Geeta's killer had to be one of the 50 employees working there that day, which meant from that point on, they all had to keep showing up there with the knowledge that at least one of their co-workers was a murderer and continuing to get away with it. I heard that morale at the plant went down following Hita's death, and I can certainly understand why, as I'm sure many of the employees felt that they had to constantly look over their shoulders. It seems like the majority consensus about Geeta at the plant was that she was a very dependable and well-liked person, but there have been quotes from anonymous sources that some of Geeta's co-workers resented her because of her education and qualifications and did not appreciate being a subordinate for an immigrant. No matter who was responsible, it sounds like investigators always believed this was not a premeditated murder, but more of a spur-of-the-moment crime of passion. After all, Geeta had strangulation marks on her neck, which seems to imply that the perpetrator had no weapon on them and was trying to choke her to death, and since drowning was her exact cause of death, Geeta was technically still alive when she was thrown into the tank. We know that Geeta was heading down into the basement to calibrate the instruments when she disappeared, so it seems like she must have bumped into her killer in the corridor, who subsequently attacked her, before they removed the floor panel and dumped her body into the tank. But what could have caused things to escalate like this? Did Geeta bump into someone and get into a heated confrontation which led to violence? Or did she stumble upon something she wasn't supposed to see, which led to her being killed? It was established that one of Geeta's co-workers from the lab asked her to go down into the basement and later went to search for her, where he discovered the broken glass from Geeta's beaker. Under these circumstances, you can understand why this guy would have been one of the three employees the police zeroed in on as a potential suspect, but they apparently no longer believe that any of these three men were involved. Without knowing anything else about this lab technician, or his relationship with Geeta, or potential motives for wanting to harm her, I cannot evaluate the likelihood of him being the perpetrator. One detail I find interesting is that before this incident took place, some of the plant's employees claimed they had no idea there were tanks underneath the basement floor and walked through that area numerous times without even realizing there were millions of gallons of water below them. But obviously, Geeta's killer would have known this since they went to the trouble of removing a panel and disposing of her body. Considering that many of the screws on the panel were broken or missing, and it was left slightly ajar, I get the impression that whoever did this was in a hurry, for fear that someone would enter the corridor and catch them. So I'm assuming that when investigators were narrowing down their pool of suspects, they focused on employees who might have had knowledge of these tanks and the panels. Another odd detail of this case is that they filmed an episode of Law & Order SVU at this plant over 1 year earlier, which contained a scene where a victim's body was found floating inside a water tank. As you probably know, the bread and butter of the entire Law & Order franchise are fictitious storylines which are based on real-life crimes from the news, but this is a rare occurrence where the real-life crime occurred after the Law & Order episode. Of course, the whole thing is probably just a coincidence, as investigators found no indication that Geeta's death was some sort of copycat crime, but I can't help but wonder if the perpetrator might have seen the episode and remembered it, which is how they came up with the idea of hiding Geeta's body inside a water tank. While investigators actually looked into the possibility that Geeta's death might have been connected to another similar unsolved homicide which took place in New Jersey over 36 years beforehand. The crime occurred on August the 31st, 1968, at a massive 86-building campus for the Hoffman LaRoche pharmaceutical firm, which was located on the Passaic County-Essex County border. That evening, the body of a 22-year-old secretary named Joan Freeman was discovered in the hallway of building number 34. She had been struck on the head several times with a wooden mallet before her throat was slashed. Joan had been employed by the firm for 3 years, and since it was a Saturday, she was working there alone, doing overtime. She had spent the day in a second-floor library, recording the employees' work hours from their time cards, before she was attacked from behind in the hallway. Much like the Passaic Valley Water Commission treatment facility, the Hoffman LaRoche campus had a high level of security and was surrounded by fence, and access was restricted to employees, so this meant that Joan's killer had to be someone who worked for the company. However, there were no fingerprints found on the wooden mallet, and the knife used to slash her throat was never found, so investigators had no forensic evidence to identify a suspect. They also found nothing in Jones' background to provide any insight into a potential motive for this crime. Over the course of the next several months, a grand jury investigation would take place, though I get the impression that they did not have a specific suspect in mind and only wanted to test the waters to see what kind of case they could present if a suspect ever popped up on the radar. But even though over 300 people were interviewed, the investigation hit a complete dead end, and Jones' murder is still unsolved to this day. Given that both crimes took place in Passaic Valley, the investigators on Gita's case thought there were enough similarities to look into the possibility that they were connected. They checked to see if there were any employees who had worked for both Hoffman LaRoche and the water treatment facility during the respective time periods of each murder, but came up empty. And yes, given the massive time difference, I am inclined to believe that these two crimes are not connected, because at the minimum, Gita's killer would have had to be in their late 50s if they had also been responsible for murdering Joan. While Joan Freeman's case sounds like a pretty baffling mystery in its own right, I get the feeling that investigators only looked at her murder because they were grasping at straws and desperate to explore any possible lead to help them solve Gita's case. However, the big complicating factor in the investigation is the theory that Gita could have accidentally fallen into the water tank herself because someone left the panel open. During the early stages of the investigation, no one was even willing to entertain that notion because, well, who would have put the panel back in place after she fell in? It seems this idea gained traction when Scottish forensic pathologist Derek Pounder pushed forward the possibility that the cold temperatures of the water caused hemorrhaging on Gita's neck, which could have been mistaken for strangulation marks. But there are numerous fallacies with this theory, and by Pounder's own admission, this type of thing only occurs in a small percentage of drowning cases. And technically, Pounder was only presenting a hypothetical scenario without actually looking at Gita's body or the autopsy reports, whereas the five pathologists who did perform a full examination concluded that she was likely the victim of a homicide. I think this theory has gained more traction since the former lead detective, James Wood, went on the record claiming that Pounder's assessment caused him to change his mind, and he now believes Gita's death was an accident. Well, you have to take into account that Wood made this statement after his retirement, and no homicide detective wants to end their career with an unsolved murder still on the books. So maybe this was his way of rationalizing the whole situation. The other ammunition for this theory is the anonymous plant insider who claimed that a water quality supervisor may have removed a panel from the basement corridor's floor to collect water samples on the day of Gita's death, providing a potential explanation for how she could have stepped in there accidentally. Since the evidence seemed to show that the panel had been put back in place very hastily, theoretically, if the responsible party returned to the scene and discovered that Gita drowned because of their negligence, they could have replaced the panel and kept their mouth shut about what they did. I mean, this plant obviously had serious internal issues with their safety protocols, so I cannot completely discount the possibility that a scenario like this took place. I know that one of the three potential suspects investigators focused on was a supervisor, though it's unclear if it might have been the same quote-unquote old-school water quality supervisor the anonymous insider was referring to. If a person is indirectly responsible for someone's death by negligence, but is interrogated as if they committed murder, you have to wonder if that might affect their demeanor. I know that James Wood said he believed that one of the suspects was on the verge of cracking and making a confession before he stopped talking to the police, so could this person have been overwhelmed by guilt because they were responsible for Gita's death, even though it was purely accidental? Well, one of the biggest issues with this theory is that Gita was known for being a very conscientious person, and she had walked through those basement corridors numerous times before, so everyone who knew her found it very unlikely that she would have failed to notice an open panel in the floor. I also think that if Gita had fallen into the tank, her beaker may have been found in there alongside her radio and clipboard, but the fact that it was found broken on the basement floor suggests that she got into a struggle beforehand. And even though an alternate theory was presented, to explain how cold water could have caused the marks on Geeta's neck, let's not forget that she also had additional bruising on her waist and elbow, so I really think the evidence supports her being violently attacked. I've covered so many cases where the authorities ruled someone's death a suicide or an accident and ignored compelling evidence to suggest homicide, but I think this is one case where they got it right the first time around, and that any alternate theories besides Geeta being murdered do not hold up at all. But even if by chance this was an accident, whoever left that panel open and caused Geeta to fall to her death still needs to be held accountable for what happened. Of course, we still don't have a clear-cut idea of what the motive might have been for a homicide, but I doubt the crime was pre-planned, and I think the perpetrator or perpetrators just got very lucky that they weren't caught in the act, and some potentially crucial evidence which could have implicated them wound up being destroyed. But no matter how Geeta died, this was just an incredibly tragic end to her life. Remember, this is a woman who found great success in her male-dominated native country by not only becoming the first woman to attend Loyola College, but graduating as the top student in her class. She then moved to the U.S. to provide a better life for her family, and was pretty much living the American dream until her life was cut short by a pretty horrific death. I've read a number of heartbreaking articles about the difficulties that Geeta's husband Jaya and their children have had dealing with the loss, as I know that Jaya actually held on to Geeta's cell phone and would frequently call her voicemail, just so he could hear his deceased wife speak again. The Angara family has frequently voiced their frustrations over the police's inability to make an arrest in this case, but I honestly get the impression that without any real forensic evidence to work with, there's really not much more they can do until they receive a big break. Perhaps all this case needs for a resolution is for the right person to come forward. So if you happen to have any information on the death of Geeta Angara, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Another reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, I released an episode about my top 10 favorite update segments from Unsolved Mysteries where cases were solved. And for our patrons in tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Jared K, Maggie, Sarah NB, Sana K, Katie H, and Tara K. Thank you all so much for your support. And before we bring this episode to a close, I just want to provide a plug for a new ebook which has been written by one of our very own listeners, Suzanne Reed. It's titled Anonymous Tip: The Unsolved Disappearances of Tracy Marie Crowe, Elizabeth Miller, and Tiffany Sessions. And yes, we covered all three of those cases on an episode of The Trail Went Cold, which was released nearly 2 years ago, and since the disappearances are still unsolved, I'm very glad to see an in-depth book about these missing women. It's currently available for purchase on Kindle at Amazon, so I'd highly recommend you check it out. Once again, it's titled Anonymous Tip: The Unsolved Disappearances of Tracy Marie Crowe, Elizabeth Miller, and Tiffany Sessions. I also just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or Spotify. So have yourself a good week and join us next Wednesday for another brand new episode of The Trail Went Cold. Thank you.